Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the podcast that we call Waiting for Doom, and you call it Waiting for Doom 2, and it's called that on the site that you found it, we presume, or on the little podcatcher. Anyway, it's Waiting for Doom. It's where we wait for the Doom Patrol comic, and they like to make us wait, don't they, Mike?
Yes, they sure do. Hello, yes, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at AvantGarv. You can reach us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com or on the Waiting for Doom Facebook page. You can also check out mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com, which is run by our fellow Doom bro Doug Savisha, and all our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Podbean.com.
I am Paul, and you can find me on Twitter at reading_Hicks. And we also have a Sentient Show Twitter account, which is Wilfred, who's at WFDPod. Hey, Wilfred.
Hello, humans.
And we are also sponsored by the Comicosity website.
Yes, Comicosity, great website for all the news, reviews, and previews of nothing but the comics. They don't deal with the toys or the movies or the TV shows, just the damn comics, which we all love for the most part.
Yep. We do.
Anyway, Paul, how has your couple of weeks been since we've been on air?
I've been on a crazy movie watching spree at home. So.
Ooh, lucky.
Yeah, and my wife's out of town, so I'm just, I've got the TV, I've got the remote.
Victory is yours.
Yeah, but I just, coincidentally, I'm ending up watching a lot of films with Matt Damon in them. It's just, you know, by sheer random choice.
Okay.
Yeah, but it got me thinking, what if Matt Damon is the same person in every single film? Like, what if, it, you know, he's really an immortal traveling through the film universe? So, you know, he was at the Great Wall of China, you know, several hundred years ago. And, you know, he was a sort of Oxford wanker in The Talented Mr. Ripley. And then he got into the space program for a while and went to Mars. And, you know, he also learned maths at school.
Yeah. It's kind of lucky that when he bought that zoo, he didn't bust out any of the Jason Bourne moves, you know?
Yeah.
Could have been a bit dangerous for the animals.
What if he's all the same character and everything? I mean, he's got this consistent blandness and, you know. But, you know, like he's, when his wife dies in Contagion, you know, he recovered from that and, you know, maybe that's when he went and bought the zoo after that.
So Matt Damon is the immortal man.
It could be, yes. Yeah. I have seen no evidence to contradict my theory.
Weirdly enough, I saw a preview for a Matt Damon film today, a new one called Downsizing, about people that get shrunk down in order to combat the world's overpopulation problem.
Oh, golly. So,
and he still looked very much like Matt Damon and behaved like Matt Damon in that.
Doing his Matt Damon thing.
Matt Damon. Couldn't resist.
Yes, I thought we'd bring that one up. But comic-wise, I have been reading many comics, but the one I will talk about is Six Pack and Dog Welder, Hard Travelin' Heroes.
Oh, yes.
So, were you familiar with the Section 8 miniseries, which came after... Long time after Hitman, yes.
Yes, I got most of that series. I think I lost interest towards the end of it, or I just missed it at the store. I think I've got the couple of issues, or there was at least one issue where the patrol had a cameo in it.
Yeah, there's just one with the patrol. But yeah, I'm kind of with you there. I found that one disappointing. Like, I bought the trade and read it, and it's kind of like, yeah, okay. Yeah. I think Garth Ennis has run out of things to say with these characters. So Section 8 is a very silly superhero team that was introduced in the Hitman comic, which itself sort of spun from the Demon comic when Garth Ennis wrote that. But Six Pack and Dog Welder, the price finally dropped on it online, so I pulled the trigger and bought it and got it. And this one had me laughing out loud. I don't know. The mojo's back with this. It's
okay.
It's mostly a Dog Welder story. So essentially, it's like You know, in Swamp Thing, they do the whole thing of everything you know about Swamp Thing is wrong, and, you know, his powers are actually this, and, you know, he's, you know, so much greater than you imagine. They basically do exactly that with Dog Welder. Everything you knew about Dog Welder is
now, I think, before you get too much further, for those that aren't aware, can you give us a brief bio / synopsis of who and what Dog Welder is?
Well, Dog Welder is a man wearing a Dog Welder mask with a dog with well, it's a welding mask technically, but in his case, and he has sort of the oxy tubes on the back, and he has a welding what's that little torch thing?
Yep,
and he carries dead dogs, and he welds them to people to stop crime and various other things. It seems to be a fairly nasty compulsion, and he doesn't talk. And at this stage, this is the second Dog Welder. The first Dog Welder died in combat, and this is a new person who has taken up the Dog Welder mantle,
kind of like the Phantom.
Yeah,
not
yeah. But this comic, I mean, it had, there were so many funny bits, but, you know, they're just stupid gags. And it, like, is merciless. It really gets stuck into making fun of John Constantine in the DC Universe now that he's left Vertigo.
Oh, okay.
They rip the Spectre to shreds.
Right.
Seems so dumb. I think I tweeted some pictures of that.
But, yes, you did. Yes.
Yeah, but there's a threat from the star system Sirius, and all the way through the news reports, you know, have these headlines saying "Sirius threat."
Oh God,
things like that.
Right.
But the whole thing, yeah, it's the last Dog Welder story, and it's, you know, it's epic.
Okay. And,
yeah, six pack sort of gets short shrift in it, but
Much as I didn't enjoy the previous mini, I am a fan of Six Pack. I think he's hilariously wrong.
Yeah.
So I might check it out.
Yeah, well, Garth Ennis, writer, Russ Braun on art, and John Kalis on colours. So, yeah. Nice. I recommend it. Cool. You know, it was a nice comeback. After the disappointment of Section 8, this one sort of delivered and hit me in that stupid sweet spot that Garth Ennis can hit better than anyone else.
Okay.
What about you, Mark? I've hooked this all with Matt Damon and Dog Welder.
No, that's fine. That's fine. It's good to hear what you've been into. Comics-wise for me, not a great deal. A couple of issues of Detective Comics, wrapping up the recent storyline that focused on Azrael and his quote-unquote brother in and the whole battle there with the whole Saint Dumas thing going on. That was cool. That was really cool.
I hate Azrael.
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any particular reason why?
He was a character who was sort of served a purpose and then just never went away, and he really should have just gone away.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like you know, the end of First Blood when John Rambo doesn't die. It's like at that point he just should die. You don't need, you know, that's the end of the story with him.
Right.
Anyway.
I will admit I do like the supporting cast in the current Detective Comics run. I think they're really varied and very cool. So that's been good. And been keeping up with the Dark Knight's Metal event series. I've reread the first two issues of the main series now, and I'm still a little bit confused as to what's going on. As exciting and as action-packed as it is, the fact that Batman's got these metals in him now and he's been dissolved into some sort of dimensional gate and unleashed these other Batmen. It's a bit of a head-scratcher, but it, you know, Capullo art looks great, you know, and Snyder writing it, he's always got weird and wonderful ideas floating around in there. So I'm not sure if I'll get the tie-in issues of any of the other series. I think there's like a Nightwing and something else that came out recently that ties into it. I'll stick with picking up the main book, though, because it looks like crazy fun, and I'm sure it will all make sense by the end of it.
Or it'll finish.
Yep. Six, yeah, little of column A, little column B. Anyway, on that note, let's go and have a look at what's going down on Derrington Way, shall we?
Sure. Okay, so if we look at what's stirring in the world of Derrington and the world of Way, there we do have a solicitation for a new issue of Doom Patrol. Ooh. Yay, yay, happy for a minute. So Doom Patrol number 12, written by Jared Way, art by and cover by Nick Derrington, a variant cover by Beeple. Who's Beeple?
Beeple, okay.
That sounds avant-garde. This issue will ship with two covers. Sweet. So, something normal is happening to the Doom Patrol, which means not weird, since their own normal is very weird. They are mysterious forces at work, unseen hands rewriting history, and the change is so gradual the team doesn't even necessarily see how much they are changing. The end of our second big Doom Patrol arc leads into big things to come next month. On sale December 27th, 32 pages, full colour, $3.99 US for mature readers. But you and I might read it anyway.
Phew! They can't stop us. Not at all.
They can't. And interesting cover. It has like a wedding cake topper thing with a character who is sort of a... I think it's the white light character that we've seen, you know, linked to murdering some god with Danny the Brick.
Yeah, and we saw him flipping through all the different TV channels recently as well. Yes,
in issue 8 of the Doom Patrol.
Yes,
he is standing atop the cake, and on his body is withheld duty copyright, is written in the white space. So, I don't know what that means. But he seems to have a spiky helmet, a bit like Sauron from Lord of the Rings, or Strife from the X-Men.
Oh, that's a deep cut. Wow.
And he is standing next to a sort of alien princess type figure.
Although,
yes.
I think you and I think it might be someone else that we've been wanting to see back.
Well, it's quite hard to see the image, but if you zoom in, the face looks a little bit melty in a kind of Rita way. Maybe.
Yeah. Which then... led me to wonder.
Barking up the wrong tree.
No, I reckon it could be Rita, which makes me then wonder if Mr. White Light is Mento.
Well, he is wearing a helmet. Mento is known for his helmets.
And, you know, they have been a couple.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I guess we'll have to wait for that one to come in.
And interesting, it's sort of got a TV test pattern behind them. Sort of blurry, you know, channel-changing look at the Doom Patrol logo in the midst of it. Interesting, interesting.
Yes.
Yeah. And in other news of the not-good variety, Doom Patrol is late to again.
At this stage.
At this stage. Now, I think most of the Young Animal team went to Leeds for the Thought Bubble convention on the last weekend. Maybe that's why they've stopped doing comics for a bit. Anyway, so yeah, Doug got the scoop from Newsarama, who got the scoop from somewhere else. But yeah, Doug on his site has a post about this and the cover that we were just talking about. But he says, Doom Patrol has been pushed back one calendar month. Doom Patrol number 9 now scheduled for release in mid-October. Instead of when it was meant to come next week, wasn't
next
it?
Week it was originally due. Yeah, not anymore.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just going to kick some furniture.
table flip.
And 10 and 11 have also been pushed back. So you know, this new brand new solicitation for 12 could be wrong anyway. So that could be. You know, I don't know if we'll get two issues in December. It's never happened before, and chances are it won't.
On the other hand, it would be a very nice Christmas gift.
It would be lovely, yes.
Two issues in the 1 month, that would be great.
Yeah. Anyway, that's what's happening on Derrington Way.
Okay. And yes, obviously, as we can all hear now, coming up, right behind Derrington Way is the Doom Clock. And so, yes, as we look upon the face of the mighty Doom Clock, we can see that the last Doom Patrol book we had came out 3 weeks ago, issue 8 of volume 6, which we discussed in episode 104, and showed the return of Lotion the Cat, the relationship between him and Casey taking an interesting turn, and the public launch of the Wonder Food shit. Issue 9 is, at this stage, scheduled for release on October 18th, which is just 3 weeks away. So,
yay.
Bit of a wait. It's been worse.
Sorry, boo.
Make up your mind. Gosh. We've had longer waits, you know.
We have.
And this week in Doom Patrol history, thanks to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, going on sale for $1.50 American on September 26th of 1989, which is 28 years to the day as we record this episode. How freaky is that? With a cover date of November of that year, was issue 27 of Doom Patrol Volume 2 from Grant Morrison, Richard Case, John Nyberg, Johnny Workman Jr., and Daniel Vozzo. And this issue was titled The Painting That Ate Paris. And yes, we got to see Mr. Nobody bringing together the Brotherhood of Data for a history lesson on a certain hungry painting and revealing a plan to steal it from Horst Eismann, a scientist and collector of the strange, before unleashing the power of the painting upon Paris. Viva alliteration.
Yeah.
So, yes, we were joined by special guest Jessica Boyd when we covered this storyline from issues 26 through 29, way, way, way back in episode 14 from April of 2015. So you can check that out for more. I warn you now, it's a long episode. It's like an hour and 20 minutes or something, but it's worth it. It's so good.
Oh.
And, yeah, that's it for the Doom Clock this week.
Welcome to the world of tomorrow!
The Legion of Superheroes through the Silver Age, the Bronze Age, the Baxter series, 5 years later, the reboot, the three-boot, the retro-boot, the animated series. We have banded together as the Legion of Super Bloggers to cover it all. Seek us out at legionofsuperbloggers.blogspot.com.
Always have to say it that way.
Haven't you ever heard of a little thing called showmanship?
And now it's part of the show that we call Doomsplaining, where we explain things Doom Patrol-ish. Anyway, so firstly, we will be talking about issue 78 of the Doom Patrol from Volume 2 run, which came out, well, had a cover of May 1994, but it actually came out on the 5th of April 1994. Cover price $1.95, written by Rachel Pollack, art by Ted McKeever, who did art and colour and ink, and ink, you know, pencils and inks and everything, lettered by the lettering machine Johnny Workman Jr. So, Mike, spill your guts on it.
Well, let's start with the cover, which is probably one of my favourite covers from this part of Volume 2. And it shows Cliff and Kate in an embrace. So I think it's very representative of what they go through in this issue. It's by Kyle Baker, and it's great. It almost reminds me of some of Sam Keith's work from the Max.
It does have that very cartoonish vibe.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it looks sort of watercolory.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, but it's got one thing we haven't really mentioned is the little taglines that have been popping on the cover. So I think we named an episode after one of them, but
well, yes, we mixed up two of the titles for one of the episodes, which completely escapes me at this point in time.
Well, that's what the kids call a mashup.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, and this one says, reconfiguring the unfigurable.
That makes a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, and the next one says, terminating the interminable. So
I'll try and mash that one up.
Just words. Twerking the untwerkable.
Ah, there we go. There's the episode title right there. Just make a note. Anyway, when we last saw the team... In episode 105, which we covered issues 76 and 77 in. The Builders had launched their attack on the patrol, aiming to retrieve George and Marion, who they considered property of the US government, as slaves contributing to the project to rebuild the Tower of Babel. We also met the Tiresiae Elliot, who informed the team that they'll need to merge a man and woman together to summon forth a new Tiresias, which was not the news Cliff Steele, Robot Man, expected just after receiving a brand new body from the chief, Niles Calder. He, poor old Cliff, he never gets a break.
No. Well, anyway. Gets broken a lot.
No. So we open this issue to find Cliff and Kate having different reactions to what's been asked of them. Cliff, with encouragement from Dorothy the Eight-Faced Girl, seems fine with the prospect of merging with Kate, whereas she is slightly freaked out. She admits that she's never been in a relationship that lasted more than a year and finds the concept of merging bodies too bizarre. Realizing it's their only course of action against the Builders, the pair meet with Elliot and confirm that they're ready to merge, though Kate wishes she knew more about what they're supposed to do. Elliot confirms that because the Tiresiae have withdrawn from our world, in order to summon their help against the Builders, they need to become more like them, hence the merging. So Elliot opens a portal, taking them to a tree, which comes to life after Elliot places their hands upon it. The branches grow and grab Cliff and Kate, before completely enveloping them together. Suddenly, the merged form appears. Imagine Robot Man looking slightly slimmer, and now with breasts.
I don't have to imagine, I can see it.
A brief interlude shows us that the Builders are expanding their attack to the rest of Violet Valley as they dismantle buildings they believe are not up to code. We learn from a policeman watching the chaos unfold that similar things are happening across the country. Even in the White House, Hillary Clinton has noticed that her husband is a changed person after returning from his secret visit to the Pentagon. And in the president's office, we see him signing paperwork under coercion of the Builders agent, the contract. And the contract uses the president's phone to call the army general attacking the patrol with an update on proceedings. The general tells the contract that he now needs to help destabilize the patrol's position before they can contact the Tiresiae, before the general orders the Builders to launch yet another attack. Elsewhere in another dimension, in a terrifying killing field, the merged being of Kate and Cliff, a coagbot person, if you will, begin their search for the...
Can I offer Clate?
Ooh! Clate. I like that. Well done, sir. Well done. You're on fire tonight, mate.
I am.
So, Clate, begin their search for the Tiresiae. A half-buried body wails that they are at the battlefield of the war where the Tower of Babel was destroyed, and nearly all the Tiresiae are dead. Clate must become a true Tiresiae before the survivors will come to them. And on cue, a pair of copulating snakes appear, taunting Clate into killing them, just as their namesake, the Greek prophet Tiresias, did. But killing either snake will turn Clate into the same gender as the victim. "But which do you choose?" ask the snakes. "What if they killed both? What happens then?" they are taunted. Clate drops the sticks they are about to use and continue on. The snakes tease them that they'll have to do it the hard way, deciphering and delighting in signs, which is what Tiresias apparently means, he who delights in signs. As they continue upon the path, Kate tries to discuss with Cliff the sensations they are feeling, how it feels to be in one body and the one psyche. But other than commenting on the fact that he feels like he's in a human body again finally, although one with breasts, he doesn't really want to talk about what's going on with them. The path leads them to the top of a hill where a giant eye gazes down at them. They walk into the eye and awaken upon a bed in an operating theatre, surrounded by strange beings, and Niles's head's there. Another figure joins the group and is about to begin an operation to turn them into a brand new being, but Clate refuses and attack the figure, and suddenly they're returned back to the killing fields. Clate continue their search when they suddenly hear the tune Love Me Tender by Elvis Presley, and they come across a memory of Kate's from her youth, but she begs Cliff to avoid it. She doesn't want to relive it. Soon they come across more signs left by the Tiresiae and learn that by touching them, they can hear the voices of the Tiresiae, And these voices tell our heroes that they must burn up in their pain if they want to find them. As they continue along, the rain turns to snow and begins to literally weigh down upon their body when they are suddenly met by the contract. Though exhausted, they laughed and reject the agent's offer of new, real, separate bodies and say they just want to be themselves. But they get told, I'm the contract. Nobody turns me down. I've got angels working for me. You can't say no. And they reply, "You don't have anything we need." And they continue on their way. The contract berates them as they leave, saying they'll die just like the Tauresiae. Eventually, Clayt come upon a cemetery and they collapse exhausted. The ground begins to crumble and their body turns to rubble, falling into a heap. Voices wonder aloud, how long does it take to burn away the pain? How many centuries to dissolve the shame and loneliness? How much time between the death of one world and the birth of another? Clayt dissolve into the ground. Suddenly, a bird, a snake, and bright lights appear at the mound, and a voice speaks, welcome. Clayt are suddenly reborn and reappear, floating before a giant praying mantis, bull, and bird. The bull speaks, welcome, Tiresias. And that's where it ends. What do you think of that one, Paul?
it's an issue.
Is an issue. It's about, 20-something pages long? Yeah.
It's very much, the sort of... the journey upward or downward and all the different, the stresses and the pains and everything that you go through on your, to gain enlightenment, isn't it?
Yeah. Really? It's like a hero's journey in classical literature. And, they're tempted and taunted and tortured along the way until they reach their final destination and suffer through all of that to succeed. So there's that. I thought I did enjoy the art in this. I don't know whether it was because McKeever was doing his own colours as well, but this issue I finally appreciated all of the art in the issue. It wasn't
right.
Some of the previous ones, the panels and the action has been very, very dense and very crammed in. Whereas with this one, there was a bit more space between everything.
Yeah. Yeah, it is an issue that's getting you to the next issue more than anything else, really. Like, I don't think there's any particular revelations in here about any of the characters, except, Kate has experiences she doesn't want to relive and wants to suppress.
Yeah. The dream, memory, vision that they come across is from her past before she transitioned, and there's something quite unpleasant about it.
Yeah.
And we learn more about that in a little bit, but you're right. It just sort of, the journey happens, they survive, they make it there, and they meet the Tiresiae.
Yeah.
So well done.
I did note that this came out shortly after Jack Kirby died, and there's a tribute to Jack Kirby in the issue.
Oh. Yeah. I somehow missed that.
Just before the final splash page. Anyway.
One moment, please. I'm just going to... Oh, there we go. Okay, yes. Yeah. Oh.
Mm.
There you go.
Yeah, but I mean, certainly working into this imagery in the comic is the fact that Cliff, his new body seems to have like a crown of thorns around the head, and, as he and Kate, or Clayt as we will call them.
I love Clayt. Well done. Oh, I love it. Thank you.
As they suffer, it's very much, a Christ journey of sacrifice,
Yeah, the crown is much more pronounced.
Yeah,
in some of these panels, yeah. and on the cover as well.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Mm. Anyway, but I'm not finding a lot to dig into in this one.
Yeah, it just sort of, it looks cool, it's a journey, it happens, And we can move right on to the next issue.
Okay, so Doom Patrol 79 from the, what did it say? June 1994 cover date. Actually came out on 3rd of May 1994, according to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, $1.95, which I'd like to pay. Edited by Lou Stathis, written by Rachel Pollack, art and colour by Ted McKeever, lettered by Johnny Workman Jr., and another cover by Kyle Baker, which, yeah, it has all the sort of Doom Patrol members sort of plummeting through the sky towards the Pentagon, which seems to be blowing up.
Yes.
But I do note that why is Robot Man wearing a green, you know, top and green pants? Like, he looks like Goofy.
That's an interesting point because that's not how he dresses inside the issue.
Yeah. It's like Kyle Baker, you know, offered the chance to draw robot bodies, going, no. Interesting. Anyway, yes, let's get into it.
Okay.
So, picking up where you left off in the last issue, in Violet Valley, the builders have broken through the defences and the Doom Patrol members in attendance are struggling to hold back the many attackers and prevent them from capturing George and Marion. The general calls on the White City, which is sort of a walking building, to sanctionise Elliot. And just before it can, Clate returns with the missing Teresia in tow.
Hooray.
Their mere presence causes the general's body to smoke, skin flaking away, revealing a skeleton underneath. And the general, desperate to struggle to survive, calls on the builders to recommence artillery bombardment, and they aim right at the newly arrived Teresia. Cliff yells in horror, his voice separating from Kate's, and Kate tries to coagulate the building golem, but neither can coordinate their efforts, and Cliff tells Kate they must break their union, and they do. Goodbye, Clate. The general, becoming more monstrous and disfigured, declares the power of grammar, fixed word forms in the face of the Teresia's fluidity. Unable to talk, the Teresia turn away, but Elliot steps forward. I will speak for them. The general scoffs as the golem fires a girder, knocking Elliot aside, and Cliff grapples with the golem. Kate runs into the path of the White City building monster, but Dorothy warns Kate not to look at it. But it's too late. Kate is sucked inside. Dorothy plunges in behind her. Suddenly, Kate finds herself reliving a memory. She is younger, in her male body, wearing a dress, surrounded by shadowy shapes of boys from her class. Hey, Clarky, we knew you were queer, but we never thought you were that queer. One pulls a knife. You want to be a girl? You want to be a girl so much? I'll make you a girl. We're going to do to you what we did to the other one. And they push Dorothy in front of her, beaten and bloody, and she falls on the floor in front of Kate. Dorothy has been searching for months for Kate inside the White City, and they taunt them both now. Let's see them dance, the queer and the apehead. Kate is slashed with a knife and is giving up. I thought it was over, buried. I guess I was stupid to think I could ever get away. Dorothy is unwilling to leave her this way. You've got to believe me. We're not the same as we were. Really, we've got the Doom Patrol. We've got Cliff and George and Marion and even Professor Calder and the Teresia. The shadowy assailants close in, but Dorothy and Kate begin to fight them off. Dorothy summons her imaginary friends, Jolly Hanger and Baby Twig, and they whisk them to safety. Outside, the chief is pondering the language restrictions and realizes the sexually related spirits, the ghosts inside Violet Valley, have another way of communicating. They speak in tongues. He commands Charlie the Living Doll to make the SRS speak in tongues, and the general covers his ears as the Teresia join in. The buildings turn into trees, the golem starts to crumble, and the White City explodes. The general falls to his knees, begging for mercy, crumbling into dust. His last words are warning. You can never destroy Babel. Babel is the foundation of the world. If you want to destroy Babel, you will have to destroy the world. The Teresia think for a minute. Then they pronounce, the builder is right. We must destroy the world.
Uh-oh.
At the Pentagon, two soldiers are bunkered down watching things whirling around outside the Pentagon. I don't know what they are. The art really doesn't tell me. Wondering why they can't do anything. But the president himself says, hands off the Tower of Babel. Suddenly, the Teresia and the Doom Patrol teleport in behind them. They have summoned the lightning to destroy the tower and the world. And the Doom Patrol will bear witness. Dorothy tells Kate that she must stop this, and Charlie says that Kate has the answers. The sea passions have changed. Kate approaches the Tricio, and they tell her, the lightning is still building. Speak until it is ready. Kate says, you, listen to me, Tricio. You have to listen to me. Please, I was one of you. I understand. I've seen both ways, and I understand. But this is wrong. You don't know this world. Damn it, you're making a mistake. I know you want to bring back change and freedom, and you think they can't exist in this world of choices, but you're wrong. I can show you. And the Tricio say, this world is a slave of Babel, a mistake, a lie, where nothing can change. And Kate, sort of turning skeletal and her flesh going see-through, says, no, things change here all the time. It's just the outer forms that stay rigid. You've just got to look at us, the Doom Patrol. Look at me. I've changed my body to match my vision and my desire. And she's in a girl's dress at this point, but in a male body. You can change easier than I can blink. But so what? I did it. I made it happen. And what about Cliff and George and Marion and Niles? They don't have any bodies, but they're here. And her body gets real bulky and masculine at this point.
Yeah.
And Dorothy joins in. And what about me? I've got all these people living inside me, but they're also outside. And they're not real, but they are. And some I made up and some I didn't. The Tricio speak. Yes, you have shown us possibilities, but it's not enough. The builders made this world in their own image. We cannot destroy them without destroying their creation. Elliot says, if you kill this world, you kill me. I will not leave it. And then only three of you will remain, the final Tricio. And then Elliot takes wings and takes to the air. Restore this truce. Break the tower, but not its foundations. Let the builders go back asleep. I will stay here and watch them. Suddenly, energy blasts down into the center of the Pentagon, destroying every trace of what was below. The Tricio say their farewell. Elliot will remain in this world, never to leave. Kate thanks Elliot for the sacrifice. Elliot responds, actually, the timeless time can just get a little boring if you're there timelessly long enough. Now I've got a whole new world to explore. In the epilogue, we see the Pentagon is being repaired. President Clinton, now an invigorated man, has ordered the area below permanently sealed off under 2-foot metal plating. The last piece closes over the skeleton of the general, leaving his remains in the darkness forever. Ooh. So, thoughts?
Well, it's an ending. No, it's... It didn't wow me, but it did an okay job of wrapping it up. I like that we got to see the memory that Kate didn't want to revisit, and the way she and Dorothy fought their way out of that. I thought that was well done. I like the little bit of the twist in that the Tricio were going to destroy the world in order to get rid of the builders. But, you know, again, Kate steps up to the front and say, well, no, you know, change still happens in this world and it can still be saved. You just need to get rid of the actual problem, not everything. again, another big moment for Kate there. And a nice ending, sort of as it began, with the builders being buried away, at the start of this storyline, they'd been buried where the tower had originally stood, and now they're being buried again where the new tower had stood. So, nice bit of... I can't think of the word.
Circular closure?
Sure, let's say that. Nice bit of closure there.
Yeah, I mean, I think Rachel Pollack in this story, she's got a very good vehicle to examine gender identity issues. Mm. And, it's the story is basically designed to get that stuff across and explore it. And I think it's very masterful of that. And it's very much, I don't know, I think, you know, it's not the most enjoyable story, but it is probably the most assured, confidently written one.
Yeah.
So far?
As we've said before, when Rachel came on board the book, the first couple of issues were very much a bridge between Morrison's work and herself, and then the generational war was... it wasn't great, but it still showed promise as to what to come. I think you're right. Here, Rachel's a lot more confident in what she's presenting on the page.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like any other voice than her own.
No.
And I think it's really assisted by, you know, the very bold, distinctive art of Ted McKeever, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. There's some parts of his art I'm not a massive fan of. As I said before, when it's very, when the pages are really packed and really dark, I'm not a big fan of that. But when there's a bit more colour in them and a bit more space, yeah, I like it.
Hmm. Yeah. But I'm very curious to see what comes next after this. You know, I mean, we do get a status quo return at the end, really, so everything is sort of back to normal for all the characters. But I would say Cliff has learned a fair bit more about Kate and understands her much better.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. And I know I appreciated Kate a lot more once this arc had wrapped up as well.
Yeah.
She's very brave and very strong, and she's been through a heck of a lot.
Yeah.
And I think that's why she fits in so well with the team as well.
Yeah, and one does wonder if there's autobiographical elements of this for Rachel Pollack, you know, as a
that would not surprise woman. Me at all. Yeah.
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 Yeah, because certainly, you know, a lot of the taunting and everything at school, you know, rings true, doesn't it?
I think there's, especially when you read things that happen in this day and age still, you get that sense of realism there with some of those scenes involving Kate.
Yeah.
Mm. But yes, we're even closer to the tail end of Volume 2 now. We've only got, 8 issues to go?
8 issues to go, yeah.
Not yeah. Many. So, what a wild and crazy ride it's been.
Sure.
Anyway, I think we've doomsplained that lot pretty well.
Yeah. Awesome.
And now it's time for the question of the week as we dive into the mailbag of doom. And last time on the show, we asked you, who is the least stable hero in comics? And first off, we heard from Wait What? Who is at the anti-fascist on Twitter, and they replied with the Punisher. That's a fair call.
Yeah. Yeah. Borderline, not really a hero sometimes, too.
Yeah. Soon to be Marvel's most violent show on Netflix, apparently. Yeah. So long as they have a hallway fight scene, it'll be fine.
Yeah. What if it's just like one big long hallway, which is circular?
Yeah. Except now with bullets. Yeah,
they could do the whole show in that. Anyway, we have from Big Tim Styles as well. Hey, Tim. And he said, how about the new 52 Roy Harper trying to commit suicide by Killer Croc? Sounds pretty unstable. Yeah, poor Roy Harper.
Yeah.
Had some rough times.
Death by Killer Croc. Yeah, not good.
Remember when he got his arm ripped off and then he was doing heroin again and...
Yeah, not great.
Using dead cats as weapons.
Don't remember that bit. So, unstable, yes. We then heard from Dr. Ange 70, who's our friend Ange, and he said, mentally unstable, the Spectre. Can't get a read on that guy.
Yeah, he's all over the place.
Mm.
Mm. We heard from Alan Middleton, Professor Alan, on Twitter, and he said, Mr. Fantastic, first he named himself that, second he has an inexplicable vendetta against the rightful elected ruler of Latveria.
Good point, yes.
Yeah, little bit of Dr. Doom fan bias there, but we'll let it slide.
Yeah, yeah. We then heard from Ange again, and this time he offered a physically unstable hero, and he said, Damage, that guy blows up good.
Yes. We heard from Aaron Long, who said, the greatest Doom Patrol member of them all, Gambit. Yay.
Right. Thanks, Aaron.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you.
We then heard from @UnlikelyNerd1, who goes by the handle of Mafarkin Tarkin. otherwise known as Chris, and he said, like ever, that would probably be the Century. Yeah. I have to admit, I've never read anything with a Century in.
I know Century stories by reputation, but yeah.
A few other people add some comments about him later on. Yeah.
We had from Ash Moby One. He said, Ambush Bug, never know when he's going to pop up. By the way, does this cover of Ambush Bug 2 remind you of anyone? And it's a giant, monstrous koala.
Yeah.
Looks like it needs to be punched.
Yes. Martin Gray, at Mark Gray on the Twitters, chimed in with Pietro, Hank, Matt, I can't choose, Brainiac 5. They're all,
yes.
All reasonable submissions. Thank you, Martin.
Brainiac 5 kept doing things that almost killed the team.
Yeah, well,
yeah.
There you go.
We heard from Coffee and Comics, which is Clinton, our friend Clinton. He said, Crazy Jane, a Robbie Reed from, that's the Hero for Hero Hot, no, the Hero Dial, Dial H one.
Right.
Chris King, who's the other Dial H person, I thought. Anyway, Vicky Grant, Shade the Changing Man, and or Shade the Changing Girl. Yes, they're all fairly unstable people.
Yeah. Joe Crawford at J3K_C also said Century. Not looking good for Century.
No. At Fractures, or Fracknarok, as he said, easy, and he put up a picture of Mento going mental, which is from the Swamp Thing comic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Poor old Mento.
Yeah.
Just like a Babylon fool. Anyway, Bud A at RBudF09 said, particularly before that first mug of the day, it's Too Much Coffee Man. Have to admit, I've never read anything with Too Much Coffee Man in. I only know him from ads and publicity shots.
We call him Clinton, don't we?
Don't give away his secret origin.
Dean H.S. Jones, our friend, he said, for her multiple conflicting backstories that still stay in continuity, a bad temper and an easier driven team up with Harley Quinn, Power Girl. That was hard to read. So Power Girl, yes, she is unstable sometimes.
Brian Mulvey, at Brian Mulvey 916, said, it's got to be that little brick thrower, Ignatz Mouse.
Oh, wow. From is that the precursor to Mickey Mouse?
I don't know. But yeah, was it the Crazy Cat comic strip or something? Like, something that the mouse was always throwing a brick at the cat.
Yeah, it sounds very old. It's before my time.
A deep cut. Thanks, Brian.
Yeah. Tim Price at TimPrice17, he said, maybe these are more anti-heroes. The Hulk, Deadpool. Yes.
Yeah, I'd say Deadpool's slightly more unstable than the Hulk. But
sort of a hero.
Yeah. Sergeant America, at Sergeant America, said, Machine Man during the next wave or Marvel Zombie series.
It was very funny. He hated people.
Right.
Generally. Yeah. Mike Lapine, at Lapine Is Me, said, Speedball. He had a bad time in Civil War. And sort of, what did he become? Like a guy who had spikes on the inside of his suit to make him suffer or something weird like that.
Okay.
Yeah, and he changed his name to... I can't remember, but yeah. Right. Purgatory or something like that. Anyway. Yeah.
Emo. Right. Ed LaTorre at Dr. Wife Quote said, I got to say, it's the Creeper. Sure, you've got characters like Starman who are legit crazy, but he seems less stable. Yeah, I've always found the Creeper kind of like... the Joker, if he had a slight good streak in him.
Yeah. And, of course, the Starman he's referring to then is the one from the Legion of Superheroes who travelled back in time and was legitimately crazy. Spent a lot of time in an asylum.
Oh, dear, that's unfortunate.
Yes. We had from Jeffrey Brown at Chizigo, and he said, Savage Dragon. I haven't read Savage Dragon since the dawn of that comic, I must admit.
I have to admit, I've never read any Savage Dragon.
I read like the first three or four issues when it was Image, I'm going to sell these and make money. Yeah.
Right. The only thing I've really noticed the Savage Dragon in... No. It was in the Max comics, I think. There was like a slight crossover, but not like pronounced, in that he turned up at the scene of a crime in the Max comic.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Anyway, LC Comics... at LC underscore comics said, it has to be Moon Knight. I will accept no other answers. Yeah, I read a bit of a recent Moon Knight run, and yeah, he's not all there.
The Lemire run?
I think that was it, yeah. This was a couple of years ago now, so, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Cool. Then we got onto the Facebook side of things, and we heard from Aaron Head Moss, who does the Task Force X podcast and many others. He said, well, at one time, I'd say Adrian Chase, a.k.a. the Vigilante, but he sort of took care of that issue on his own. Adrian Chase, the Vigilante, committed suicide because he couldn't handle stuff.
Oh.
Hmm.
I'm tempted to say spoiler warning, but it's an old comic. So.
Spoiler warning for the 80s. But
yeah.
Yes.
Andrew Watton-Davies, who is a new respondent. Thanks, Andrew, for joining us. He said, Batman, compulsively punching strangers whilst wearing BDSM gear is a poor substitute for actual therapy.
Good point.
Yes.
Yeah, well made. Aaron Head Moss came back and said, my snarky answer is anyone written by Frank Miller nowadays. Good point, yes.
The snark is strong. we heard from Joe Crawford again, and he commented that Sentry ripped Ares in half. He who kills the gods must be mad. Okay, yeah, that clears things up for me a bit, having not read Sentry.
Is that a run on the gods must be crazy? Or the killer of gods must be crazier?
I guess so.
Yeah. We heard from Jared Driscoll, and he said, Kid Psycho from the Legion of Superheroes. I believe his name explains it all. Ah, Kid Psycho, yeah. Not stable.
Right. True. Richard Nichols got in touch with us. Again, I think another new respondent. Thanks for joining us, Richard. And he offered two. He said, Constantine or Spawn?
Spawn.
I think Spawn is potentially a bit more unstable than John. John seems to have his shit together in a kind of... laid-back bastard kind of way. Spawn, he's been messed around with a heck of a lot.
John Constantine does not have his shit together in the Dog World, a comic.
Oh, dear.
Just for the record. we heard from Craig Mack, and he said, Ambush Bug. Another one for Ambush Bug.
Yep. Keith G. Baker chimed in with, Easy, Batman. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then we heard from Daniel Mendoza, another vote for The Creeper.
Mm. And Matt Coote offered Martial Law.
Ah.
I must say, I've never heard any Martial Law. So I think, isn't he a cop that just goes after superheroes?
I think so. Some
dystopian future?
Never read it. Yeah.
Okay.
Kevin O'Neill art, and I know that from League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Okay. Mm.
Yeah. What about you, Mike? Do you think you have an answer to this one?
I do. As much as I'm a fan of the character, I will have to agree with Batman. I mean, This is a guy who's had... Yes, he lost his parents at an early age, and he hasn't dealt with it in a healthy manner. He dresses up, in almost bondage gear, I guess, and goes out essentially to be even scarier than the criminals in the city, you know. And what do you know? He adopts an orphaned child and takes the child under his wing and then says, hey, psst, guess what? I'm going to teach you how to endanger your life every night. And you're going to help me do it, you know, help fight the crime. And, yeah, don't get me wrong, Detective Comics is one of my favourite titles, and I've got a shelf dedicated to it, and I love Batman's adventures, but, yeah, there's something about him, you know, when he says things like, Batman is who he really is and Bruce Wayne's just a front. It's like, yeah, you've got problems, mate. So, yeah, I'll go with Batman. Yeah. How about you, Paul?
Well, the answer's right under my nose. It's the heroes of Section 8.
Oh.
So, you know, Dog Welder, Bueno Excelente. In this incarnation, they have the female character Guts, who is literally Guts.
Right. Yep.
Quite disgusting. Of course, Dog Welder. Who else is in this team?
Poor old Sixpack.
Yes.
He's not there.
His power seems to be vomiting.
And drinking.
And drinking, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, not a lot of difference between the two for that bloke.
No.
Anyway, yeah, I'd say they're probably not very stable people.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. But we did get an email from Fabio Arbad, our friend Arbad. And he said, "Dear Mike and Paul, nowadays you can find plenty of analysis and reviews of Morrison's run and even some praise to the original Drake Premiani run, but not so much for Arcudi or Byrne's effort, nor Pollock's. That's why I'm so glad you decided to tackle her stories. Not that I'm particularly fond of Pollock's run. Some of it was weird for weird's sake. Other parts more familiar, maybe too familiar. Outer dimension foes talking gibberish. Dorothy's monthly issues. Nanos, the threat from under the Pentagon. I was reading the series when it originally came out, but eventually dropped it. Later on, I decided to give it another try and completed her run. Rereading all that later, I think that maybe Rachel Pollock was trying to acknowledge Morrison's influence on the book and to stress a line of continuity from earlier stories. But then, and now, the whole thing felt annoyingly repetitive and confusing. The art did not help. For me, things started to get on track, sort of, when Ted McKeever came on board. He brought a sense of menace to the book that Linda Medley's art lacked. His style was more in tune with the book's craziness. For all that, I'm glad the show has reached Pollock's run. Maybe you'll help me appreciate it better, or understand it a bit more. By the way, could you try to doomsplain again what the deal was with the giant pig carcass from 65? Thanks.
Thanks, Arbor. That's some good points. The menace in McKeever's art. Yeah, that's a valid point there. As for the giant pig, I think that kind of had to do maybe with animal sacrifice as part of like shamanistic rituals that were involved with all the African type deities appearing in our world in that issue. So I think
was it the nanos were building sort of things that people imagined, and that was something that got imagined.
I think so, but yeah, that was also like the portal between the nanos world and ours. So
yeah,
and I think because there was a whole, you know, African motif, and it was all about, you know, shaman type voodoo sort of stuff going on. I'm not explaining this very well. It's just verbal diarrhea here. But, yeah, I think it's like sort of a tip of the hat towards animal sacrifice, shaman rituals, that sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, and partly we don't know.
That's our guarantee, folks.
Oh, dear. Now, some of you may remember that we do ask people to add iTunes reviews if they're up for it. And one of the things, if you do that, we will send you a Doom Patrol postcard from Waiting for Doom with beautiful art. And we have got a few, haven't we?
Yeah.
Come in. Yeah. So we got one from Captain Platypus, which is, I think, Edwin LaTorre Jr. And yes. He said, four stars out of five. Why did we miss a star? Anyway, if you like Doom Patrol, and let's be honest, why are you reading this if you don't, then this podcast is one of the best, if not the best, the only, hell of if I know. These guys are immensely easy on the ears with their fun, humour and insightful synopses of issues of Doom Patrol from the past and present. Sure, a lot of it is out of order, but what kind of a wimp wants to listen to a show in chronological order? So strap on your bandages, tighten your bolts, and gas up your action chair for Waiting for Doom, the best little Doom Patrol podcast from the land of Vegemite and animals that are trying to kill you.
Thanks, Ed.
Yeah. Thank you. Do we lose a star because we don't do stories in order, do you think?
Maybe that's it. We kind of do, but we kind of, yeah, we jump between volumes. Yeah.
It's for our sanity, I will say that.
I think, yeah, let's leave it at that. Yeah. We also got an iTunes review from Craigimus Max from Canada. He gave us 5 stars and said, it's a fun show focusing on DC Comics Doom Patrol. Very informative with knowledgeable hosts. Thanks, Craig.
Yeah. Awesome. And we got, finally, we got one from Australia.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And it says, 5 stars, wait no longer and get into it. The only podcast I listen to regularly, despite the fact that I wasn't the world's biggest Doom Patrol fan prior to hearing this. Mike, Paul, and the Sentient Show account Wilfred are entertaining, humorous, knowledgeable, and just like those Bundy advertisements, unmistakably Aussie. Each episode is structured in a way that just works. No better time to jump on than now with the new Gerard Way Nick Durrington book out and killing it. And don't forget to ask Mike where your pony is.
Oh, you son of a...
And that is from Moby One, our friend Moby.
Quote, unquote, friend. the ponies thing will never die, unfortunately. And if you're a recent... listener to our show, quite some time ago, Wilfred decided to post a tweet that if we got to, I think it was 1 million downloads of the show, I would send everyone a pony as thanks.
Yeah.
And that joke has never died. Thanks, Wilfred.
Yeah. It's funny, though. I mean, I think if someone really wanted a pony, they could make that happen, but clearly no one is really driven.
No. Just lazy, really.
Yeah.
They've got their hands out for ponies, but they're not committed enough to do anything about it themselves. Disappointing, guys.
Young people today, they just want to be given a pony. They don't want to earn it.
Yeah. No one wants to work for a pony anymore. Shame. No. Millennials are killing the pony industry. Oh, dear. All right, Paul. Wrap it up.
Okay.
Let's get out of here.
It's getting silly. Anyway, that's probably it for this episode of the Waiting for Doom podcast that we do. We were going to talk about another Volume 6 issue next week, but now we're not. And I think we might leave it shrouded in mystery what we will actually talk about next week.
It's pretty exciting, but let's leave them hanging.
Yeah, it's pretty undecided as well. So that's another reason to keep it vague. Yes, but we are coming back with a question of the week next week. And what name in comics do you usually pronounce wrong?
I'm sure I've mispronounced a few on this show.
Yeah, well, Teresia, Terese, Tierce, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we'll have different answers next week.
Yep.
Anyway, but if you'd like to get in touch and answer the question of the week, there's the Twitter option at WFDpod. There's the email option at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. There's the Waiting for Doom Facebook page option at Facebook. And you can also leave your answer on mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com, which is the fine website run by Doug Zavisha, all about the Doom Patrol. And a fair bit of it is about our show, which is very kind of him. Yeah. So, yeah, have a good one, Mike.
You too, Paul. And thanks, everyone, for joining us for another episode of Waiting for Doom. We'll catch you all again next time.
Waiting for Doom.
Oh, dear. Okay. I've got my notes. I've got comics. Okay. You want to do a podcast?
You got the look.
Na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. You've got the look, Paul.
Awesome. Right. That's our show, folks.